There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen, and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. It's a new week and you're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me at the Supernatural News Desk, Mr. Tim Dennis. How are you, Tim?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I still feel like crap. I got to be honest with you. I feel like I have a 10-year-old kid sitting inside my chest pounding my lungs. But other than that, I'm fine.
That's not good. I don't mean to laugh. That's not good, of course, but it's not good at all.
And for those of you tuning in, I'm actually in Toronto, Canada right now. I'm filming, as I've been telling you guys all along. We've been doing stuff. I'm filming for a TV show, for a segment on a TV show about haunted hospitals. So as soon as we know more about that, I'll let you know. And I know we've had to record separately because I didn't want to contaminate you with my disease, Tim, recently. But I've had some weird stuff going on in my house.
Hmm.
We'll cover that in a Parashare segment.
Weird stuff, you say, eh?
Yeah, I think something's trying to get my attention over here at the new place. So, and then I breached the subject with my wife, or is it broached? I can't ever remember that. Anyway, I told my wife about it, and now she started to open up to me about some weird stuff she's noticed as well. So we're going to have to keep an eye on what's going on at the humble abode. We've got brand new True Crime Tuesday tomorrow. And this is ripped right from the headlines, Tim. This is a book called Bullied to Death, a story of bullying, social media, and suicide of Cherokee Harriman. And it's a heartbreaking story. Judith Yates will join us. And Judith, man, she's got a great pedigree as well. She's a criminologist. She's the award-winning author of When Nashville Bled and The Devil You Know. She's also the editor of True Crime Case Files magazine. So she's going to be on with us tomorrow. And if you haven't subscribed already, just go to darknessradio.com, click on the True Crime Tuesday banner, and subscribe for $5 a month. You get four brand new 90 to 120-minute episodes, and we like to include our Dumb Crimes and Stupid Criminal sections as well. Sometimes we take your stories. I knew a murderer. As a matter of fact, if you knew a murderer, if you're a survivor, if you knew a murderer, if any of that has touched your life, send us your stories, dave@darknessradio.com. We may read it on an upcoming episode. And it is a Parashare Monday today, Tim, so if you have your own paranormal encounters, strange twists with ghosts, goblins, witches, Ouija board, psychic phenomena, monsters, Bigfoot, whatever, we want to hear your stories as well, so email them to me, dave@darknessradio.com. But let's get started in the world of supernatural news, Mr. Dennis. And while you're doing this, I'm going to send you, I just got a new story that was sent over to me, so I'm going to shoot it over to you on Facebook so you've got it to read as well. But where will we begin this week?
Well, we're going to start out, Dave, in Long Beach, California, in what some people may say is a long time coming. The Queen Mary is renting out its most haunted room. You know, Dave, for years, people have said, well, why don't you guys, you know, if you ever get the trip thing going again, why don't you go back to the Queen Mary? Well, we've always had a good explanation for that, and that is the Queen Mary just stopped doing the haunted trip thing. They stopped doing renting out haunted rooms and all that other stuff, and they wanted to separate themselves from the haunted industry. Well, now they've kind of taken the Hippocratic oath.
They've become doctors on the Queen Mary.
Yes, they're healing people on the Queen Mary, Dave. They've kind of become hypocrites.
Yes, which is normal. I know that Amy Bruni's group did a paranormal event there, I think, just in the last part of last year.
Yep.
So they're reopening to that idea. But When we did our events there, they gave us access to this most haunted room a few times to investigate, you know, kind of behind the scenes.
Right.
But now they're making it available to the public again?
Yeah, they are. For the first time in 30 years, the Queen Mary in Long Beach will let you stay in what... Wink, wink. We'll let you stay in what many believe is the historic ship's most haunted place. Stateroom B340, which has reported paranormal activity for years, can be rented out starting at $4.99 a night beginning Friday, April 13th. The last time the room was occupied by a guest was in the 1980s, says Stephen Sowards, general manager of the Queen Mary, in a statement. For decades, we had thousands of visitors request to occupy the room, and after 30 years, we are excited to once again extend the offer to our guests. Representatives from the Queen Mary said many paranormal encounters have taken place in stateroom B340, dating back to the ship's final ocean voyage in 1967. Previous guests have reported lights and faucets turning on and off by themselves. Other guests say their bed covers were pulled off while they were asleep, and some woke up to see a dark figure standing by their bed. Besides the chance of seeing something spooky, the room also offers a chest with items such as a Ouija board, tarot cards, crystal ball, and ghost hunting equipment, along with standard hotel room amenities. Well, that's good. Room reservations are available at, I'll give the number here, 877-342-0742. Also, for more information, you can visit queenmary.com. Now, that price tag is a little spendy, Dave. Supposedly, it's what, $4.99 a night?
Something like that.
Yeah, in order to investigate the
Queen Mary. You know, the Stanley Hotel, Tim, the part of the reason we stopped doing the Stanley event as well was because rooms started to get so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I think room 217, the Stephen King suite, is around $300, $400 a night now, too.
Yeah, it's getting up there. It's getting up there, that's for sure.
All right, where shall we go next?
Next, we move on to Coronation Street. Simon Gregson is training to be a ghost hunter as he unveils a paranormal tale. Coronation Street star Simon Gregson has revealed that he is training to hunt ghosts as he unveiled some seriously sinister paranormal goings-on in his house. The 43-year-old actor, who has played Steve McDonald on the ITV soap, which is overseas, since 1989, recently appeared on Celebrity Haunted Mansion, but revealed that he has been haunted by spooky beings for years before the show. Admitting that he had caught the ghost hunting bug since filming the program, the Coronation Street star said, "I got so into it that I've booked on some haunted course to go investigating. I'm also going on a trip to stay at the Haunted Mansion again." So he said, "I must be mad." Well, I don't know if he's mad or not. I think he just got the bug. Sharing the strange phenomenon which he had encountered in the past, Simon explained, "I lived in a flat that was haunted. I could hear breathing. There was also someone that sat on the edge of my bed. And our house at the moment is haunted by a woman in white," he added. "I don't want ghoulies in my house. I don't want ghoulies in my face. I don't want it anywhere near me, Sam. I am. I don't want it." He didn't say that part. Simon appeared on Celebrity Haunted Mansion, which was hosted by Christine Lampard, in February, when he joined the lineup of celebrities attempting to survive five nights in the terrifying Gothic mansion. The list of stars also included Lydia Bright, Allison Hammond, Anthony, is it Agogo? I've never heard of him before. Georgie Porter and Katie Price. At one scary moment, the actor even claimed that a ghost had tugged on his coat from the shadows as he entered the building with ex-Hollyoaks actress Georgie, Jack Osborne, and this morning's favorite Allison. He asked, "Did someone just hit me then?" To which I think Jack Osborne probably raised his hand and said, "I did. I mean, I don't know. Something had my arm and went like that on my arm," he insisted. "Maybe something fell off the ceiling." However, when Jack asked if it could be something else, which Simon had felt, the shaken star folded his famous housemates that he had been attacked by a ghost. Simon isn't the only one in the lineup to have spoken about his experiences with the paranormal. Georgie Porter revealed her terrifying ordeal with a real ghost, with the 30-year-old blonde beauty spilling it all to express.co.uk. "Once a book flew off a shelf, and I was literally like, there's no way it could have come off the shelf. It had been there forever," she explained. "Me and my friend turned around like, wow, we both saw that. It was in my bedroom in my house in the daytime," she added. Georgie went on to recall how she sensed a spirit lurking when she was with a friend and a man she was seeing at the time. We were talking about marriage and stuff, and the bottle of champagne literally just elevated and threw itself on the floor, she said. Meanwhile, celebrity Haunted Mansion host Christine Lampard also revealed creepy stories from her upbringing in Ireland, like drinking and such. No, I'm kidding.
Have you been hitting the NyQuil again before we started recording? You got to leave that alone. That's for me.
Well, pain pills are a hell of a drug, Dave. No, that's the end of the story. That's all there is left to it. Was just, you know, she revealed stuff about Ireland, but there was nothing left. So, yeah.
Revealing Ireland. I like the sound of that. All right. Where are we going next?
Next, we go to Canada, Dave.
I'm in Canada, Tim. I'm in Toronto.
Toronto.
Is that how you say it? Toronto, Canada?
I don't think it's Toronto, Canada.
I was hoping it'd be warmer all the way down here by the Texas border, Tim. It is not.
It isn't?
No.
Normally, it's supposed to be just so warm that you can't even stand it there in Canada.
Blah. Yeah, it's not.
It's like next to almost 100. It's almost springtime now down there in Canada. I don't know. The Falcon Lake incident, as it becomes colloquially known. That's a hard word for me to say, colloquially known. Refers to a 1967 UFO sighting by a man named Stephen Mihalik in Manitoba's Whiteshell Provincial Park. The incident garnered considerate attention from the Canadian public at the time, even prompting an investigation by Canada's National Police, the RCMP. They're huge in Texas. I don't know if you know that, Dave. The Mounties and the Rangers, they work together.
Oh, yeah. Hand in hand.
Yeah.
Or as we say with the Canadian-Mexican flair, the Mano y Hondo, I think it is.
Yes, Mano y Hondo. Mm-hmm. I drove one of those, actually, in the 90s. Yeah, it's a very compact car. It's nice. Good on gas mileage, yeah. The perfectly campy $20 coin features an illustration of a plaid-wearing Mihalik gazing up at a UFO hovering above its head. I believe that's how you say it. The coin also comes with a black light flashlight. Ooh, cool. When you shine it on the coin, the blasted yellow light covers Mihalik, who suffered considerable burns after his alleged encounter. Limited to just 4,000, the coin is retailing for $101.76. Mihalik, an amateur geologist, claimed he had been prospecting in the bushes, aren't we all, around the park's Falcon Lake when two cigar-shaped objects landed in front of him. One touched the ground while the other hovered. According to Library and Archives Canada, Mihalik said in an interview later that year that the objects began to change in front of his eyes. He said the first object remained on the ground for 45 minutes. It made a whirling sound and gradually changed in color from gray to silver. Then a hatch opened and the object emitted a bright violet light. Mihalik then claimed that he heard voices from within. He called to the voices in English, German, Italian, Polish, Ukrainian, and Russian. Holy translation, Batman. There was no response. Instead, the hatch closed quickly as if its inhabitants were spooked. Mihalik then claimed that he reached out to touch the object as it started to revolve and take off. He was pushed back by a hot blast of air that burned his clothes and left grid-shaped burns across the chest. He then felt extremely ill, vomited, and noticed a metallic smell coming from inside his body. When he got back to his hometown of Winnipeg, which is right near Dallas, Mihalik was then treated for his burns at a local hospital. And then the next day, an account of his alien encounter made it to the Winnipeg Tribune newspaper, creating a public furor and curiosity around the incident. Eventually, the RCMP were brought in to investigate Mihalik's claim. An RCMP report from June of 1967 described the burns as mysterious but legit. A large burn that covers an area approximately 1 foot in diameter. The burn was blotchy and with unburned areas inside the burn perimeter area. Attempting a month after the incident to go back to the site with Mihalik to investigate, it became apparent that Mihalik couldn't find where the event had taken place. The case was momentarily closed until Mihalik came back to the RCMP, stating that he had gone back and found it by himself and recovered some items that he had left at the scene, including burnt clothing, steel tape, and rock and soil samples. Although This all sounds like a conspiracy case of cat and mouse between a UFO believer and Canada's federal police. This next part of the story is rather eerie. In July, according to Library and Archives Canada, an RCMP report confirms that an RCMP squad leader visited Mihalik in Winnipeg, taking the samples he had brought back for testing. On July 24th, the results of these tests were sent to the RCMP, along with a memo that stated UFO reported by Stephen Mihalik, laboratory tests here indicate Earth samples taken from scene highly radioactive, radiation protection, division of Department of Health and Welfare, concerned that others may be exposed if travel in area not restricted. Mihalik then went back to the UFO site with several RCMP officers for a final time, and this time the group uncovered a large semicircle burned into the rock face about 15 feet in diameter. A representative on the expedition from the Department of Health and Welfare apparently tested the inner area of the circle and found evidence of radioactive material. No other traces of a UFO presence were found. The case was eventually investigated by multiple levels of government, including Canada's Department of National Defense and the United States Air Force. Officially, it has remained unsolved, but as one of the best documented instances of a UFO sighting due to material found at the scene and Mihalik's own accounts of his experience, it's become an indelible part of Canadian paranormal history.
Very cool. It's kind of weird, though, that you have to carry like a black light to enjoy the full aspect of this coin.
That is bizarre.
But it is cool. I mean, you and I have been involved in the numismatic field. That means coin collecting. Oh. And we've sold collectible coins. I'd like to get one of those, too. And we've got some great listeners out there that are trying to hook me up with those foreign crazy monster coins. So I appreciate it. Thank you very much. But yeah, this is, you know, if you want to get me this $200 coin, just let me know how many you want to get for me and Tim, and we'll give you addresses and let you know how to get that over to us.
Yeah, I'll get your P.O. box. I mean,
$200. Well, how about if they just stop by your house and drop it off over at 417?
No, that's fine. That's fine.
Oh. Yeah. Well, I just figured you're usually home during the day and at 417.
No. P.O. box is fine. You can send it to the P.O. box.
That just seems so cold and impersonal. They could walk right up to your front door at 418 Humber.
No. We're fine.
But then if they knocked on the door, they could greet you with a smile. You could give them a big hug for the coins.
We can meet at a neutral location like a Perkins or something.
Well, how about this? Why don't you pick Tim up at his house at 418 Humber?
No.
Well, then they could give you a ride over to Perkins.
Well, that way I could. No. I got it fixed this week. We're good. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, all right. Anyway, where are we going next?
Well, next day we're going to Atlanta, where the body. This is actually an update on a story that we did previously. The body of an employee for the Center of Disease Control and Prevention, who was reported missing more than 6 weeks ago, has been found in an Atlanta river. So you remember that? That employee was missing for a while. They found him. Unfortunately, they didn't find him alive. Timothy Cunningham's body was recovered by rescue workers in the Chattahoochee River in northwest Atlanta late Tuesday evening. The Atlanta Police Department spokesman Carlos Campos said in an emailed news release, no other details were immediately available. Police planned a news conference for Thursday afternoon. The 35-year-old Cunningham was an epidemiologist at the Atlanta-based federal agency. He disappeared February 12th. His family reported him missing on February 16th after going to his home and finding his belongings and vehicle there. Police previously had said they had no evidence of foul play, but couldn't rule it out. The civilian group Crime Stoppers offered a reward of up to $15,000 for information pointing to any criminal activity. CDC officials said previously that reports Cunningham had been passed over for promotion were incorrect. In a statement, the CDC said Cunningham received an exceptional proficiency promotion July 1st to the position of commander, an early promotion reflecting his excellence as an employee.
Hmm. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. Is it Jay-Z and the Illuminati, Tim? You can tell me.
Dave, Jay-Z is not in the Illuminati, per se. I think he's...
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Jay-Z's definitely part of the Illuminati,
No,
Dave.
No. He's a Freemason, Dave. That's the rumor. He's a Freemason. Mm. So is... even though she can't be. Supposedly, Beyonce is a high priestess in the Illuminati. I don't know.
What?
There's all that. By the way, Dave, I did get us Jay-Z and Beyonce tickets, too, to go with the Steely Dan and Doobie Brothers tickets. So we're...
Yeah, I'm giving my lung
What?
Surgery.
What?
On that day.
You did?
Both days. I have two lungs.
You can't move it?
On both of those days, I'll
be gone.
It's
going to be a summer full of great music, Dave.
I'm donating those lungs.
What?
It's very busy. I'm dyeing my goatee.
What?
That I started. I don't
what
know if
color?
You saw the recent pictures.
No, I didn't.
It's quite stellar. It's
really?
Back to brown. I wanted to just go back and in the immortal words of Cher, I could turn back time.
Well, you don't want to sing that at the Jay-Z concert. Because they'll
your day job. Jerks. That's what they do. Every
really?
Time I sing,
they
don't
do?
Quit your day job, they tell me.
Really? That's horrible. You know, maybe if you start singing some Jay-Z, they get afraid of you.
See, the thing is, I wouldn't quit my day job. I'd keep my day job and I'd sing at night because that's when all the good singers are out. That's how it works.
Oh.
If I could turn back time.
Maybe if you sing some Beyonce. Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. No, not going to happen.
Hmm.
No. Okay. But thankfully, The Supernatural is available in all states. Where are we going next in the world of Supernatural news, Tim?
Well, Dave, it's that time of the program where you get to jump around and say, I was right, I was right, I was right. Even though I will put a disclaimer in there, I'm sure.
Yes.
No.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you how this is easily shut down at the end of the story.
Let's just let the story tell its tale, Tim, before you start jinkying it up. Because I never get the chance to jinky up your AI taking
over. Oh, you do all the time.
I never make a good fight for it. All right, let's hear what the story is.
This even feels rotten coming out of my mouth. That's what she said. Zombie raccoons infected with this.
Wait. Dude, if she said that, you need to go get checked.
Well,
I'm your buddy. I'm your friend. I love you. But if a woman ever tells you this feels rotten coming out of your mouth, there's a pretty good scene. You need to get some help.
I'm at the doctor just like three times a week. I mean,
get them to core things out or something because that's wrong. You should never. Nobody should ever tell that.
I got my check and flush like 3,000 miles ago. So I think I'm good. Yeah.
All right. Let me sit back in quiet and revel at this news story. So give me the headline again, if you don't mind, Tim.
Zombie raccoons infected with distemper investigated by police. Okay. Now, there's a problem, Dave, in this headline already.
Let's just let the story unfold.
They've already debunked your story in the headline.
Ooh. Rabies and distemper is the machination. It's the beginning, Tim. It's the genesis of how the zombie virus turns when it gets into the human bloodstream. Just go ahead and read. You'll hear it.
Sure.
Before the end of the story, cops will be eating cops. Hookers will be eating pimps.
They already do,
over,
Dave.
Man.
Yeah.
What?
They already do. Yeah. That's how they get the job. We go to Chicago, where authorities in Ohio have been getting some strange calls about so-called zombie raccoons. It's because they got nothing better to do. The Bears were horrible this year. The raccoons are infected with distemper, a virus that can kill your dog or cat and causes them to exhibit strange symptoms. Mm-hmm. Animal control officials said they've been seeing more zombie raccoons in Cook County. Mm-hmm. Imagine seeing a raccoon on its hind legs, not unusual, saliva dripping from its mouth, again, not unusual, its head nodding up and down and teeth bared as you...
I'm helping you with this, Tim. It's like a theater of the mind.
Uh-huh. As you let your...
Come on, Groot! It's the only raccoon I know that speaks, so I'm going with that one.
All right. As you let your dog out in the morning... Actually, you know, I saw this exact same thing. I was over at Nicollet Island Inn many, many moons ago for Valentine's Day, and I saw this exact same thing on top of a dumpster. It was like a 400-pound raccoon doing the exact same thing.
Well, that's because you were trying to dumpster dive and take away his KFC, Tim.
He was just hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, I would go back inside, said Nicole Neglia, who was dog-sitting for a friend. I would just make sure that I was in between the dogs and the raccoon and keep the dog safe and get away as quickly as possible. Agreed, Scott Blomberg. He said, I'd immediately pick him up.
Baloney. If you go out there and there's like a 3-foot-tall, foaming-at-the-mouth raccoon, you're not getting between it and your dog. You are pushing the dog at the raccoon and you're running. That's what they're for. That's what they're for, Tim. Dogs are there to protect you and keep you safe from harm.
You give up your best friend?
I didn't say I'd throw you in front of it. I'd throw the dog in front of it, Tim.
Oh, okay.
Dog, they're made to battle off rabid zombie like you. You'd just cry. You'd ball up and cry.
Well, I'd probably punch him in the mouth.
Good God.
Well, if he's going to take my KFC.
Yeah, well, I don't blame you.
I'd fight him to the death.
It's delectable. It's the crack of all chicken.
It is. I'd immediately pick him up, said Scott Blomberg, talking about his French bulldog. He would probably go after him realistically. He's kind of fearless, talking about his French bulldog.
French bulldog.
French bulldog.
That's like the least fearless dog on the world.
A French bulldog would take about 10.
That's not the dog you want to send out to attack anybody.
A French bulldog would take about 10 minutes to get over there, though.
Right. Yeah. And then they'd huff and snort and lay down because they're lazy.
Right.
Every French bulldog I know likes to nap. They get up from a nap to take a nap. That's how lazy they are.
Then they need a CPAP machine by the time they get
here. Dave, as a French bulldog owner, I just want you to know that they are not the laziest dog. That would be the Basset Hound. Oh, wait, then I can hear, Dave, very funny. I'm a Basset Hound owner, and they are not the laziest dog. I'm just going to get complaints already. I can hear the tickety-tacking of psychotic keyboards right now, Tim.
Wow, you're jumping ahead. Let them gather their anger first before they...
How dare you think we're going to be angry and send emails? We're not like that. I do get those kind of emails, too.
Do you?
Yeah, where they write to tell me how angry they are at me for thinking that they're going to be angry.
Really?
No.
Oh.
All right, go on. So giant rabbit raccoons.
Right, okay.
So that are turning zombie-like. They're biting humans. Humans are then attacking other humans. Go on, I'm listening.
I think I figured out why you're sick. Distemper causes coughing, tremors, and seizures and leads raccoons to lose their fear of humans.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. That's why you're spouting off at the emailers, evidently. So they can be acting like they're limping, that they can't use their back legs, said Dr. Donna Alexander, Cook County Animal and Rabies Control. They can be standing on their back legs and then falling over. Oh, so they're drunk. Any kind of neurological equilibrium problems are signs of dips temper as well, Dave. Dips temper.
Good grief.
I got a little dips temper myself. Animal control officials and police in Ohio are investigating multiple signs of infected animals, Dr. Alexander said. They've seen an uptick in dips temper infected raccoons in Cook County as well. She said in 2016, we've took a very big jump to 47%. Since then, the numbers have declined slightly down to 43%. But knowing the disease can kill their pets worried pet owners. It's pretty terrifying, Blomberg said. I would definitely want to get my dog vaccinated to avoid contact with that. That's exactly what pet owners should do. Dr. Alexander said the best way to prevent distemper in your companion is to get it vaccinated. The vaccinations are the most important thing. Just take it from a professional dog walker in Chicago. Dog walker Molly Carlson says, I think the best thing we can do is just prevention for the dogs and doing our best to keep them safe, because there's a lot more we can control with them than just what's essentially a wild animal. The distemper vaccine. I think I've got it now, Dave. I think I was bit by a raccoon on the way in this morning. The distemper vaccine is not mandated like the rabies vaccine is, because the virus cannot spread to humans. Just ask your vet about vaccinating your pet. Hey, that rhymes. Just ask your vet about vaccinating your pet.
Mm-hmm.
Word.
To your mother. All right. Very cool. Well, you know, did you get the news story, since we're talking about Cook County in Chicago? Did you get the news story I just sent over to you?
I haven't had a chance to get over to my Facebook yet, so I have not.
Well, here, do you mind if I pull it up and I'll tell the story?
Sure.
This is disturbing to me, man. Since we're already in Chicago, Tim, the city of brotherly love, the city of angels, Chicago.
Right.
I figured we'd continue with this. And tell me this just doesn't read like something straight out of a Steven Spielberg horror movie. Okay. Are you ready?
Ready.
It's a spooky, scary place. New Chicago school is being built on the site of an estimated 38,000 unmarked graves, Tim.
Automatically, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, a 15-year-old effort to build a school in the Chicago's Dunning neighborhood is underway with an unusual complication. Construction workers are taking careful steps to avoid disturbing human remains that may lie beneath the soil. The $70 million school is to be built on the grounds of a former Cook County poorhouse where an estimated 38,000 people were buried in unmarked graves. Among the dead are residents who were too poor to afford funeral costs, unclaimed bodies, and patients from the county's insane asylum. There can be, and there have been, bodies found all over the place, said Barry Fleeg. Barry, of course, is a genealogist and cemetery researcher who began investigating the site in 1989. It's a spooky, scary place, he said. Workers have until April 27th to excavate and clear the site, remediate the soil, and relocate an existing sewer line. The school is scheduled to open on time for the 2019-2020 academic year. Though a spokesperson for Chicago Public Schools would not say what type of school it will be. A sign on the northeast corner of Oak Park Avenue and Irving Park Roads read, "Building a New Chicago," to announce the upcoming Reed Dunning School at 4071 North Oak Park Avenue. While the site can contracts indicate it will be a middle school, Nicholas Sapasto, 38th, said he is confident the campus will be either a new four-year high school for the Dunning neighborhood or a freshman academy for Taft High School. I'm sure they're going to be on top of some graves, but this is just progress, Sapasto says. It's an economic boom for our community. At 135,000 square feet, the school will accommodate about 1,200 students. According to Sapasto, the Chicago Park District plans to operate a park with a multipurpose athletic field north of the school. Build it, and they will come, Tim. Build it, and they will come. A CPS spokesperson did not respond to requests for comment, but the district is expected to announce plans for the school in the fall. Fleeg said he is nearly certain there are no intact caskets buried underneath the proposed school grounds. Bodies were primarily buried in two formal cemeteries, though scattered human remains have been discovered during previous construction projects near the campus. Children, patients from an infirmary and a tuberculosis hospital, victims of the Great Chicago Fire in 1871, and Civil War veterans were laid to rest in what is now known as the Dunning Grounds, a 320-acre stretch on the city's northwest side. In 1854, the county opened a poorhouse and farm and gradually added an insane asylum, infirmary, and tuberculosis hospital to the property. At its peak, 1,000 people were buried on the grounds each year. 1,000 people a year were buried there. The state took over in 1912 and changed the official name to Chicago State Hospital. Buildings were shuttered in 1970. Operations moved west of Oak Park Avenue to what is now Chicago Reed Mental Health Center. In the years after Chicago State Hospital closed, the state sold a bulk of the land to development firms. Today, the cemeteries are bounded by restaurants, businesses, houses, and condominiums, Tim. Bodies were unearthed in the Dunning neighborhood by workers who were building single-family homes and installing sewer lines in 1989 and again in 1995, the Tribune reported. No human remains have been found since the city began probing the school site in 2013, according to Bryant Payne, a spokesman with the city's public building commission.
I was told
this just sounds really bad.
Yeah, I was told always use a condominium. Yeah. You know, I think it's the best thing that could happen for Chicago school students, and here's why. A lot of kids are acting up these days, Dave. A lot of kids are unruly, and what better way to put them back into place than ghosts?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's why when they're all like, "Don't tell me what to do." That's pretty much my grasp of how children speak.
Right.
Then ghosts will be like, boo, y'all. You know?
Yeah. Oliver Twist will put them back in place. Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that weird, though? There are 38,000 graves kind of underneath this site, and they're just going to throw up a school, willy and nilly, Tim. That's going to go horribly wrong for them. All right. Where are we off to next?
I'm almost remiss to say this name because we kind of got a little flack for Derbyshire last week. Was it?
Yes.
Yeah. So This would be Oxfordshire.
I think you got it right. Oh, that sounds right to me.
Does
Oxfordshire.
It?
Sure.
Sure.
Sure, sure.
It's sure,
Oxford,
sure.
Sure,
Oxford,
sure.
Sure, sure.
Sure,
sure, sure, sure.
Keep your dimmer to here.
Right. What was the strange blue glow, they're asking, moving across the Oxfordshire sky? I say it was Superman. That's what I say. A strange blue glow that we, I'm just reporting it right now. I'm just going to throw it out there and let them decide. A strange blue glow that was spotted moving across the sky over Oxfordshire. You decide whether I did it right or not. Last night with sightings from all over the county, mm-hmm. country, county and beyond. Mm-hmm. You decide. A blue light described by some as appearing in two places like eyes moved across the sky and was spied from, I'm not even going to say that, all the way mm-hmm. south to Buckinghamshire, Shire.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Sure. Each report of the strange blue glow noted it moving, sometimes quickly. Several theories have been put forward, including light from a train traveling north from High Wycombe to, is it Bicester? It's got to be.
Yeah, of course it is. Mm-hmm.
Michael Major believes he has the answer. He said an RAF transporter plane heading from, they have such weird names over there, behind the clouds to the landing lights and wing and taillight reflecting through cloud, giving off blue tint. Dave Hudson, who lives in, I'm just going to say it's Bicester. Why not?
Bicester, sure.
Bister, Fister, you decide. I can only say what I saw, a large purple-blue light moving slowly across the sky from northeast to southwest. No sound as a plane or chopper would make, definitely not a train or reflection from floodwaters. Oxfordshire Astronomy, it says Oxfordshire Astronomy, I think they meant astronomer, Mary McIntyre, said she was contacted by several people last night asking if she knew what the phenomenon was. She now has proposed a rational explanation of her own, that the blue glow was caused by lights on the ground at a party or event illuminating the cloud above. Mrs. McIntyre said, I had people contacting me about this last night. I didn't see it myself, but looking at the photos, it looked to me like something was being illuminated by blue floodlights. You often get this when somewhere is holding an event. When clouds are really low, like the ones we had during the heavy rain and hail showers last night, it causes any light on the ground to be reflected back much more vividly than when the clouds are higher.
I call shenanigans! It's obviously alien.
Okay.
Extraterrestrial.
It's Superman. Yeah. I've seen a similar effect just with standard LED light pollution from a town a few miles from here. She added, it certainly isn't aliens. Well, look at her. Little Miss shit all over my aliens theory.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
right.
I got all the answers. Look at me. I'm a big guy. I got nothing. All right.
Are you ready for this?
I am.
Oh my God, this couldn't be more obvious category.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Most flat earthers consider themselves very religious, Dave.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Just 66% of millennials firmly believe that the earth is round. That's it. Those who believe the earth is flat vary in the exact theories, but whether they believe in science or religious literature as the basis for their claims, a new YouGov study reveals that 2% of Americans resolutely say the earth is flat. That's just 2%, Dave.
Mm.
8,215 U.S. adults were questioned on February 6, 2018. Results are weighted to be representative of the U.S. population. The first question is, do you believe that the world is round or flat? 84% said, I have always believed the world is round. 5% said, I have always thought the world is round, but more recently, I am skeptical or have doubts. 2% said, I have always thought the world is flat, but more recently, I am skeptical or have doubts. 2% said, I have always believe the world is flat, and 7% are other or not sure. I don't know what the other or not sure means. While an overwhelmingly majority of Americans, 84%, believe that the earth is round, at least 5% of the public say they used to believe that, but now have their doubts. Flat earthers find traction in their beliefs among a younger generation of Americans. Young millennials aged 18 to 24 are likelier than any other age group to say they believe that the earth is flat, 4%. 8,215. U.S. adults were questioned on February 6, 2018. Results are weighted to be representative of the U.S. population. Data from YouGov profile suggests a link between belief in a flat earth and spirituality. For some flat earthers, evidence of the earth's shape may be found in scripture. More than half the flat earthers, 52%, consider themselves very religious compared to just a fifth of all Americans, which is 20%. So there you go.
All right, flat earthers, bring it. I want your proof. I did hear an interesting deal that the world is actually shaped like a bowl. That's what holds all the water in, Tim.
Is that
it's
what
flat
it is?
On top and a bowl underneath.
Aw. So we can put our cereal in it.
Yes.
Aw.
Yeah. All right. Where are we off to? How many more do we have here?
I believe we have, let's see, 1, 2, 3.
All right, let's hear it. What have we got next?
Oh, hold on. I gotta
move. No, I want to hear it. What have we got next?
Jeez, you're so impatient. The precise image of what Jesus looked like. We have a 3D replica created from the Shroud of Turin, Dave. We know what Jeebus looked like.
Mm-hmm.
It's official. Didn't we already know what he looked like? I mean, he's that white guy in the painting.
Kind of looks like Jared Leto.
He does. He looks like Jared Leto. Case closed. I mean,
case closed. Everybody go home.
Yeah, you people don't need to argue.
Here, folks. Keep moving.
I mean, he's a white guy, isn't he? I love that. And then people go, no, he was Middle Eastern. Mm-hmm. Pardon me. I need to take a sip. I've had some issues with my voice the last month, so I need to maintain well-hydrated status. All right. One of the most well-known relics in archaeological history is leading researchers to believe that they know the precise image of what Jesus looked like on Earth. The Shroud of Turin is a 14-foot linen cloth that believed to have wrapped the body of Jesus Christ after the crucifixion. Researchers in Padua, Italy, you know something, Dave, they took it a shroud. Have unveiled a 3D carbon copy of what Jesus looked like based on the precise measurements of the cloth. I have a feeling he's only about two foot long, 3 foot wide. Yeah. Science is not that's a measurement joke. Science is not able to define the name of the man that was wrapped there, but the perfect correspondence of the Gospels and of the Bible in general with the shroud leads me to think the man was just Jesus, said Giulio Fanti, a professor of mechanical and thermal measurements at the University of Padua. You can find him in his office, Dave.
Looks like a Jesus to me. I got the picture under the wall. Looks just like this guy. Case closed.
It pretty much it measures up. See, I took a shroud and I put it up against the picture here on my wall. Same size. For example,
bingo bango bango, it's a Jesus.
Let's all go out for tutti frutti. For example, thousands of men were crucified by Romans, but one only, Jesus, was crowned by thorns. And the shroud shows many wounds on the forehead, temples, and nape due to a crown of thorns. For me, even if science doesn't confirm the name of that man, I've recognized him from a more general point of view, he added. Wow, this guy is just scientific. He's nailing it down. Fanti has studied the shroud for the last 20 years and led the research team that created the 3D carbon model of Jesus. He said the statue is a three-dimensional representation of the actual size of the man on the shroud. We believe that we have the precise image of what Jesus looked like on this earth, he said. Oh, people aren't going to like this, Dave. He's very white.
It's a little bit like Jared Leto.
He does
look like... And Ben Stiller. That's how he looks.
He looks very much like Jared Leto. We have studied for years using the most sophisticated 3D technologies, the image left by the body on the sheet, and the statue is the final result, Fanti told Shy. It's an Italian publication. Maybe it's She. I don't know. It's C-H-I. I'm not a big Italian guy. According to our studies, Jesus was a man of extraordinary beauty, long-limbed, but very robust. He loved his red sauces, evidently, Dave. He was nearly 5 feet 10 inches tall, whereas the average height at the time...
Here, take a eat of this bread. It eats in my body. And the gravy, that's in my blood.
The gravy is in my... You know what? Yeah. This is a good red sauce. I'm not going to lie.
It's very good.
Whereas the average height at the time was around 5 foot 5. So he was a pretty tall guy. You know, Dave.
For your information, Mr. Schrader, Jesus was not Italian, so please stop referring to him with an Italian accent. Sincerely yours, a disgruntled listener.
If they would have had a basketball team at the time, Jesus would have been a center.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And he had a regal and majestic expression, Fonte went on to say. Oh, he's very regal. The University of Padua and Padua Hospital worked in collaboration with sculptor Sergio Rodella to create the life-size image, according to Il Mattino di Padova, which is, bless me, which is an Italian publication. In August, researchers from the Institute of Crystallography found chemicals in the stains on the shroud, confirming that the stains were actual blood. Researchers also learned that the blood belonged to someone who suffered from extreme amounts of injury and pain. That also from the no-duh section of our story.
Right.
Right. The blood serum tells us that before dying, the person was suffering. Elvio Carlino, a researcher from the Institute of Crystallography, told CBN News, "This means that the Turin shroud is not fake. It is certainly the funeral fabric that wrapped a tortured man." Fonte used to research the cloth and the three-dimensional projection of the figure to confirm the man sustained numerous wounds on his body before death. "I counted 370 wounds from the flagellation without taking into account the wounds on his sides, which the shroud doesn't show because it only enveloped the back and the front of the body," Fonte explained to Chi. "We can therefore hypothesize a total of at least 600 blows, he continued. "In addition, the three-dimensional reconstruction has made it possible to discover that at the moment of his death, the man of the shroud sagged down towards the right because his right shoulder was dislocated so seriously as to injure the nerves." Fonte told CBN News that many people have been moved by this depiction of Christ. A priest wanted this statue in his church for the Easter days. Some non-believers were moved too, he said. So there you go.
I wonder if it'll show any kind of properties. I mean, this 3D imagery made from that scan.
I don't know. I'm looking at it. It's pretty...
it is pretty impressive,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is pretty impressive. Yeah.
All right. Last two stories. Where are we going next?
In this story, a reward has been offered for the return of a stolen UFO alien grave marker in Texas. Evidently, the aliens will give you a UFO. Or a UFO and an IOU, I meant to say. A UFO, an IOU.
Let's take two.
Take two. A reward has been offered for the return of a stolen UFO alien grave marker in Texas. The UFO will give you an IOU. There you go. We go to Aurora, Texas, Dave. A Dallas lawyer is offering $1,000 for the return of a grave marker stolen from a cemetery in the small Texas city of Aurora, where, according to local legend, the remains of an alien killed in a UFO crash were buried. Stratton Horace, a Dallas civil defense attorney, said he doesn't necessarily believe the reported April 17, 1897 crash in the tiny city of about 27 miles north of downtown Fort Worth involved an aircraft from outer space. That's the longest sentence I've ever read in my life. Or that there was even a crash at all. But he enjoys reading about and researching stories of unidentified flying objects and wants to see if his financial offer might turn up the evidence one way or another. It's a legend that persists after 120 years, and it's pretty remarkable, Horace said in a telephone interview. I'm skeptical, but would love to find some evidence that something has happened that we could not explain. Horace's offer comes a little more than 2 weeks before the 121st anniversary of the reported crash and about 4 weeks before a planned April 28th tour of the cemetery that is free and open to the public. The grave marker was stolen in 1972, around the time that the nonprofit Mutual UFO Network published an investigative piece about the Aurora incident. A replacement marker also was stolen in 2012, said Aurora City Administrator Tony Wheeler, a longtime area resident. The marker was an asymmetrical stone that featured a crude etching of the cigar-shaped aircraft with three holes. Today, the gravesite is marked only by a boulder, although some visitors to the cemetery have used ink to inscribe the rock with messages such as, "Rest in peace, my alien brother." A small wood cross and flowers also were seen at the gravesite during a recent visit. On April 17, 1897, a story attributed to Aurora cotton buyer S.E. Hayden appeared in the Dallas Morning News. About 6 o'clock this morning, the early risers of Aurora were astonished at the sudden appearance of the airship, which has been sailing through the country.
The story went on to explain that an aircraft smacked into a windmill just a few hundred feet north of what is now Texas 114 and crashed into a field. Supposedly, the pilot, who many people in the town have referred to by the nickname Ned for decades, was buried in the town cemetery. The incident occurred 6 years before the Wright brothers' historical first human flight at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, and nearly 50 years before the much more famous unidentified flying object reportedly crashed in Roswell, New Mexico. Horace said he got the idea for offering a reward after visiting the cemetery on a whim on a recent Saturday. He encountered a father and young son who were visiting the site and shared with them tidbits of information he had read about the Aurora UFO incident during his research. Another generation will remember that story because of that visit, he said. If someone comes forward with the grave marker, Horace said he will not pursue criminal charges. It will be no questions asked. I don't want anyone to feel like they were in trouble, he said. Horace said he will hire an investigator he uses for legal cases to oversee an investigation of the grave marker, possibly including a study into who did the etchings of the grave marker and where the stone material came from. Once that work is complete, Horace said he will consider donating the grave marker to either Aurora City officials or the local cemetery association, or otherwise taking steps to ensure it is kept safely for future generations.
Yeah. Why would people steal it? I mean, I get the historic relevance and the curiosity factor of it, but why not just leave it where it is? That's part of the culture of that community. Why do you have to screw with it? People are such assholes.
I don't know. It would be for the return and examination for the original gravesite for everyone to see it, Horace went on to say. Anyone wishing to contact Horace to discuss the reward or other aspects of the case may email stratton.horace@wilsonelser.com.
All right, and our final story of supernatural news, Mr. Dennis, where shall we go now?
Well, Dave, if you've ever wanted to get out of a traffic ticket and you don't have a bodacious set of tatas, this is how you do it. It's finally been revealed. A driver in India put on quite the performance when he was stopped for a traffic violation and attempted to get out of the ticket by acting possessed.
Oh, God. All right.
The bizarre show unfolded in the Indian city of Gujarat. After the unnamed man had been caught by police parking his car in a prohibited area. Rather than simply accept the rather nominal fee for the violation, the driver opted a more unusual response in the form of a breathtakingly bad impression of someone suddenly falling victim to spiritual possession. The oddly mesmerizing display featured the man wildly flailing his arms and bobbing his head in a fashion that looked more akin to the infamous dance moves of Seinfeld character Elaine Benes rather than someone overtaken by spirits. It would appear that the amused police officers agreed with this assessment as they issued the ticket to the man despite his supernatural claims.
And that's it for this week's Supernatural News. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we've got Parashare, plus my two strange encounters, which you'll hear about again as the week progresses. Stay tuned. We've got that coming up next here on the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness.
Hello, welcome back. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, supernatural news correspondent Tim Dennis. This is the Parashare segment of said show, Tim. Now, I talked about it on a show last week that I was in the middle of recording about the imaginary friends on Friday's show.
Yep.
And had the weirdest thing happen, man. You know, we saved this cat recently. My oldest son found it half frozen to death on his property. And didn't know what to do with it. You know, should I put it down, Dad? So we took it in and we've nursed it back to health. It's been doing pretty good. It's getting bigger, stronger. It's definitely a vocal cat. Mm-hmm. But as I'm sitting here recording that episode in my home studio, this cat starts like lunging and ducking like it's looking at something and it's fearful of it. I mean, it hits the ground and ears get pinned straight back and it's at nothing, which was really unnerving to watch this whole thing unfold in front of me.
Weird.
Right?
Yeah.
Then I pre-recorded Wednesday's show, since I'm going to be out of town here in Toronto, Tim. That's up in Canada.
Yep.
I recorded the Wednesday show.
Mm-hmm.
During the Wednesday show, as we're talking about strange paranormal phenomena, I'm the only one here. All right?
Mm-hmm.
My TV goes on. While I'm in my recording studio, my TV turns on. And I have a smart TV, and I've got this weird kind of remote. When you hold the remote, it puts like a little white dot on your screen.
Okay.
And you move it around, and you point to what you want, and you click it, and that'll take you to that app that it wants to launch.
Okay.
I'm looking at all of the remotes sitting on the table. The white dot starts moving around and picks an app and fires off the app.
Weird.
So I reach over and I grab the TV remote and I turn the TV off and I set the remote back down, all just trying to, while she's in the middle of telling me the story, not interrupt her.
Hmm.
Boom. TV flaps right back on. All the remotes are accounted for, man, sitting in front of me.
Weird.
And then the white cursor starts moving and goes right back to that app again and clicks it. So I turned off the TV a second time. Nothing else happened. So I bring it up to my wife. I'm like, honey, we might have something. And she goes, you know, it's interesting you brought that up. And she begins telling me about some of the situations that she's been having in the house. So I might have a new ghosty friend. See what happens? You get a new place. You're in there. You're living your life. You're a happy person. And all of a sudden, boom, ghosts, Tim. Ghosts.
Weird, huh?
Yeah. Creepy, huh?
Now, do you think that maybe Do you think the one from the old place might have followed you over to the new place?
I don't know. Because, again, if it was attached to one of the weird items I have, I guess why not, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I can't tell you. It doesn't like the cats, and the cat does not seem to like it. So I'm not sure.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that's what's been going on in my world. Let's get started with some of the stories that you, the listeners, have been sending in. And remember, you can always email them to me at dave@darknessradio.com. That's Dave. That's me. That's the little ampersand. Darknessradio, the name of the show, .com. Well, no, Dave. The show, I thought, is called Beyond the Darkness. Well, it's Darkness Radio Presents Beyond the Darkness. Just, you know, we shorten things up because we's lazy around here. Hello, Dave and Tim! Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point.
Hi.
Very happy to be talking to us, I see.
Yeah.
I have had several paranormal-type experiences in my lifetime, and I'm only 29. I'm currently listening to your episode that dealt with dreams called Dreams and the Dead. I've had a couple of premonition dreams, and I've had times in my life that I can't decide if they were dreams or real life. The latest dream I've had is quite puzzling. I bought a fairy house last night to study to see if fairies were real. I wasn't really ready to invite them into my home, so I just nonchalantly placed it on my dresser. Well, I woke up at 3:27 a.m. that morning. I don't know how exactly I knew that it was 3:27 a.m. because I don't remember looking at my phone or a clock, but I just knew it. I rolled over and saw my fiance staring at me with his eyes wide and in a daze. He said something to me, and I said, okay, rolled over and went back to sleep. I don't know what happened or if it was just a dream, but it was definitely weird. I've had a couple more stories and a couple from family members, but I know you're busy. If interested, please write me back. Thank you, Courtney. No, that's not how it works, Courtney. Yeah. You just write us all your stories.
Right.
We use them and fill the show with entertaining stories.
Yeah.
That's how it kind of works. I don't write you back. But thank you. You know, feel free to send us more stories.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of dream that was, to be honest with you. Hi, Dave and Tim. I've wanted to send this for a while, but I've always been uncomfortable about talking about it. I've had many strange things happen to me over the years, but this is the only time I can't convince myself that it was anything other than the paranormal. Here goes. I was 16 at the time and had a bedroom in the basement. I was the only one who slept down there. Up to this point, I had heard footsteps, and sometimes I'd wake up to what I thought was something yelling my name. things I chalked up to dreaming or an overactive imagination. One night I just laid down. I always wore a long sleeve shirt to bed. It was always so cold in my room. I reached over to check my alarm and then rolled over to my back and put my hands behind my head. I thought I'd heard something and sat up to turn on my light. My light was an old style with a pull cord that I had long enough so I didn't have to get out of bed to reach it. I turned it on and nothing looked out of place, so I shut it off and returned to laying down with my hands behind my head, fingers interlaced. As soon as I got comfy, I felt someone or something grab my shirt and literally pull my arm so hard that my hands came apart. I about shit my pants, shot up out of bed, kind of doing an army roll, turning on the light before I hit the ground. There was nothing in my room that I could see. I slept on the couch for a week after that, and people laughed at me when I told them about it, so I stopped talking about it, but it's always stuck with me. Thanks for taking the time, and I love your show. Sincerely, Henry. Well, thank you, Henry. It's a little-known fact, Tim, that if ghosts screw with you in bed, you always can go to the safety and sanctity of a couch because they refuse to mess with couches.
Oh, yeah. It's cool. Yeah.
Ghosts are like, I'm going to get, crap, he's on the couch.
Yep.
That's not true, actually. A lot of people have seen weird stuff while sitting on the couch. We had that one, remember that one Bloody Bones Man story?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Where the couple is having what we call intimacy, Tim.
Oh, yeah.
When a man loves a woman, little Timmy, they fall in love and they decide that they want to be intimate, Timmy.
No.
And they have the sex. And
what?
Whilst having the sex, the man who is mounted upon said woman dipped his head so she could see over his shoulders. And there standing at the end of the couch was the Bloody Bones Man watching them. Remember that?
Was he holding the camera?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Lick your lips. Make it look more realistic. Hey, Dave and Tim. I'm a longtime listener and fan. After many years of listening, I've decided to finally sit down and share an interesting experience I had. Well, we'll be the judge of that.
Right.
A few months before my wife and I got married, I moved into a house that would be our first home together. It wasn't much, but it was affordable and in a convenient location for both of us. It was an older remodeled home that was built in 1915, I believe. When I first moved in, all I had was a couch and a TV. So I lived primarily in the living room, just me and my dog Trip. Soon after moving in, I was awakened by my dog growling at random corners and hallways in the house. I attributed to rodents and creaks and pops in the house. Never thought much about it. Fast forward to a few months later, after I got married and my wife moved in. My dog would still occasionally be caught growling and staring at a random place in the house, and it began catching my attention more and more. While the wife and I were at work, we would keep Trip in a garage separate from the house, as we weren't supposed to have him in the home. Oops. Multiple times, I would come home to my dog running around the yard playing. I would try to figure out how he escaped the garage, but the doors were still locked, and no opening was there for him to get out. I came up with a theory that the landlord was coming by to be nosy and letting him out for whatever reason. So I bought a large kennel, and that phenomena came to an end. One night, I got up to get a glass of water from the tap, Tim. From the tap!
No!
Standing at the sink, I could look out the window towards the back deck and yard. I see my Trip running across the deck towards the driveway. I remember him having a blue hue, and it was kind of foggy. I run to the door and call him back in, and he comes running out of the bedroom. Where he had been the whole time. I figured it was another dog and just went back to sleep. The same thing happened to me 2 to 3 times. The exact dog, exact path. Soon after, my wife started telling me she would hear me come home at night, but when she got up to see me, it was hours before I was due home, and I was never there. She said she could hear me shush my dog and everything like I did every night when I got home. I don't know the answers, and maybe it was just all our imagination, but I would love to hear your opinion on the matter. Thanks for the years of education and entertainment. And that comes from Kobe. Well, Kobe, here's a couple of things. How many times have you been sitting there watching a TV show and your dog's conked out on the couch and you see their legs start running and they're maybe you were seeing the astral projection of your dog running around in the yard?
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe.
Maybe.
That is a possibility. Or maybe you guys just live on a time slip portal, and that's why you're able to relive these haunting moments. Because I've often believed we are haunting ourselves, and that a lot of what we experience and the things we hear are nothing more than just ourselves kind of recorded in that house playing over and over again. All right, next story, Tim. Mm-hmm. Unless you had something to add to
that one. No.
Hey, Tim, all in capitals, and Dave.
Hey.
Just capitalized D. I didn't forget you, Tim.
Aww.
Exclamation point.
Thanks.
I have a bazillion. Well, okay, maybe just a million ghost stories, and I definitely will be sharing those with you in the future. I just don't have the time or patience to sit and type them all up at once. I know how much you love to hear that you won't get them all in one email. I love hospital ghost stories. I've had a couple experiences at a hospital that I worked at. Hospitals can be so active and have tons of potential for ghost activity. About 2 years ago, I was working in a small rural hospital. Tim, rural.
Rural?
That word is hard to say. Rural.
It is. Yeah.
The hospital had a wing for regular patients and a wing for prisoners who would be brought in from the prison that was located in the town. Now, the prison wing would only be opened and used if there were five or more prisoners admitted. This way, the non-prisoner wing would not fill up with prisoners, making the other patients and their families uncomfortable. I worked the night shift, 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., and because the hospital was small and rural, there were not people or family members who were walking around the hospital during the night, as you may see in a larger, busier hospital. Anyway, a lab was located in the hospital that blood samples and the like were taken to. If I had time during my shifts, I would run stuff to the lab between downtime to help out our CNAs. Now, there had been times that I had run to the prisoner wing alone to get some supplies or meds. And the first few times I did, I was super creeped out. There's something about the air and the feel in there that would freak me out. I got the feeling like I was being watched. I would hurry so I could get in and get the hell out ASAP. After the After the first few times of going there alone, I always made someone come with me. One night, while walking to the lab alone, I passed the prisoner wing entrance, which was dark and empty. You could always feel a creepy feeling in there. No big deal. Just walk fast like one of those mall walkers and get past it quickly. So on my way back to my unit from the lab again, I passed the entrance to the prisoner wing. This time as I passed it, I heard someone whistling a tune, Tim. Mm-hmm. Whistling a tune. I slowed down and did a quick 2-second peek in through the opening. It was dark and empty. No staff in there. Who would be in there in the dark and whistling? I know who. No one. So I hauled ass back to my unit and told a couple of my coworkers who believed me and hadn't had hadn't experienced anything themselves there. Fast forward a couple of months. It was during the summertime, Tim, when our patient load is decreased significantly to mostly just locals. Wintertime is a lot busier because of the snowbirds. Our unit has 20 beds, but this night we only had about half that many patients. When you walk into the unit, which was an oval-shaped floor plan, the nurse's station is directly in front of you, and you have patient rooms on your right and left sides. Each side is a hallway with 10 rooms going down, and there's another nurse station, Tim, in the back.
Huh.
Suddenly, I'm turning into Tigger. Each room has a glass front like an ICU room, so you can see inside the room. Hence the term ICU, apparently. Empty rooms have the curtains open, and most patients have them closed for patient privacy. This night, the patients were placed in the rooms towards the front of the unit, where the entrance is, but for patient safety. And most of the staff, the nurses and CNAs, stayed at the nurse's station in the front. One of my CNAs, who was assigned to my patients, ended up sitting in the back nurse's station because she needed a computer to chart on. I went to the back where she was sitting, and I was standing on the outside of the counter so I could face her directly and speak to her while she was sitting in front of me. As I'm standing there talking to her, I'm looking over her head at the empty patient rooms behind her. As I'm talking to her, I had to stop, and I'm pretty sure I stopped mid-sentence with my mouth agape. I saw a man with a patient gown on walk from one side of an empty room to the other. I saw him, full apparition, go from one end of the room to the other. I knew that those rooms were empty. the CNA watching my face started loudly saying, "What? What? What? What's going on?" And she jumped up thinking that someone was behind her. I told her not so calmly that I saw a man in room 113. I went to tell the other nurses. They checked to see if a patient had died in that room, and no one had. The beds in all the rooms are ICU beds and used for ICU and non-ICU patients. And we wondered if the bed was one that maybe a patient had passed away on. There's just no way to check. This was the topic of the night, since it amped us all up. A few hours later, the little old German house cleaning lady with her strong accent came in the room to clean stuff and overheard us talking about the apparition I saw. She wanted to share her story and started telling us what she experienced when she cleans the prison wing. She told us that when she cleans in the prison wing by herself, she will hear someone whistling, Tim. Someone whistling.
No.
Is there anything more chilling than that, Tim?
Nope.
I was like, holy crap, I heard the whistling coming from there a few months ago. This totally validated my experience. When I first started, there was one particular room that was up by the front nurse's station that would catch my eye. There were times that I would be charting at one of the computers that faced the room or walking by that room. Out of the corner of my eye, I would see what looked like a man standing at the doorway. When I would look, it would be gone. You could just see it like the corner of your eyes. I told one of the nurses who had worked there for a while, and she told me that a male patient had recently passed away in that room. Well, I hope you enjoyed my hospital ghost experiences, and I will work on typing up many others. I want to thank you both, Dave and Tim, for the show. Uh-huh. I love it, and it's become a huge part of my morning ritual. Until next time, thanks, Cheyenne. Well, thank you, Cheyenne. We appreciate you making us part of your ritual. Unless, of course, that ritual involves slaying people. We don't want to be a part of that.
Yeah, no, not so much.
Dave and Tim. That's how this one begins. As I was sleeping late one night, something woke me from a very deep sleep. I laid in my bed with my eyes open, wondering what it could have been that woke me. I didn't hear anything out of the ordinary. No loud noises, no crazy neighbors, or really anything. I was just about to close my eyes when out of the corner of my eye, I saw movement. I had vertical blinds on my bedroom window. It looked like someone had taken their finger and held the blinds open for a few seconds and then just let them go. They swung back and forth. I was so scared because I knew I was wide awake. I could feel evil in the room, Tim.
Ew.
I pulled my covers up to my chin. I laid there real still, and I started praying as the blinds swung back and forth, slowing down and finally stopping. I was awake and praying until the very unsettling and evil feeling went away, Tim. Because there's nothing more evil than swinging blinds, Tim. Swinging blinds, Tim!
That is pretty evil.
That and whistling.
Yeah.
Never happened again. Boy, was I glad. We moved out not too long after that. I was so happy to move. Little did I know we would move to an apartment that had a ghost in it. More to follow. Love your show, Dave and Tim. Tim, I hope you're feeling great. Lots of hugs. Bobby in California.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm
glad you're feeling better. They don't care about my coughing ass. I see how it is. Thanks, Bobby in California.
Well, thank you, Bobby.
You're such a Richard Gere of the radio world.
Well, I got small junk. What are you talking about?
What? Why do you got to take it there? I don't know that. First of all, let me go on the record saying I don't know the size of your junk.
What?
Second of all, no, you know, you're just kind of the romantic lead, apparently.
I don't have any small rodents in my anus. I don't know why you're
calling me. That's a fallacy. It was a large rodent. All right. At the time of this story, I worked as an auditor. He didn't even start off with Dear Dave and Tim. He just goes right into a story. Wow. I kind of appreciate that, Ryan. Thank you. At the time of the story, I worked as an auditor for the supply chain that assembled, stored, and shipped products. I worked in SLC. I think that's St. Louis City, Tim. Oh. Or is that Salt Lake City?
Might be Salt Lake City. Yeah.
Or is that Santa's Laboratory craziness?
It might be one of those things. Yeah, yeah.
I worked in SLC through our auditing team was sent to Riverside, California to perform an audit of the company's warehouse located there. Mm. We worked with some selected employees to help count product. It was June 25th of '09, Tim.
Mm.
I was partnered with a man. His name was Edward from Venezuela. He was actually from El Salvador. He was, on first glance, an imposing man. I like that he lied and then went and immediately straightened it up for us. We appreciate right. that. He was, on first glance, an imposing man, and I was nervous as how to make the next hour or so pass without total silence and me not saying the wrong thing and getting punched. I decided I decided to ask if he's ever seen Bigfoot. This made him crack a smile and reply in the negative. I then went on to chupacabra, aliens, giant squid, all nothing, but he was laughing. We would go down the warehouse aisles to the locations on the list, count and chat. There was a lull in the conversation, and I asked about witches, Tim. Whistling witches. No, just witches. Oh. His face went serious. He said he had a story to tell me. He said there was a woman from his hometown he was still in touch with. One night, his boyfriend was spending the night. It was a very humid and uncomfortable night. The boyfriend was in a mood like a child where nothing was going their way. Getting ready to go to bed, the man was restless and decided he needed to set up the woman's hammock in her porch. She listened to him attempt to hook it up and keep failing, his tantrum growing more and more. She went to the porch and was able to hook the hammock on the hook and fix the situation. This made the boyfriend infuriated and stormed home. The woman went to bed. The next day, she did not hear from her boyfriend. At lunch, she went to his house. She found the front door unlocked, and she entered. Calling his name, she found him in either his bedroom or dining room, but it was in the room that had a rafter. He was standing on a chair crying. He was crying blood. There was a noose around his neck tied to the rafter. She said that it seemed like he was waiting for her. When he saw her, he stepped off the chair and began writhing and choking. The man was too heavy to be held up by the woman, and the rope was out of reach for her. She called the police as he slowly choked to death. He was dead when the police arrived. The man was prepared for burial and placed in a coffin. That morning, the town gravediggers began digging the grave for the man. As the two men neared the required depth, one man's shovel hit what sounded like glass. They removed the dirt and found a bottle. Inside was a photo of the man whose grave they had been digging, Tim.
Jeez.
Let's see here. Oh, he's got more to the story, but I'm not allowed to read it on air. Oh, interesting. Weird.
So you're going to take us to that point, and that's it?
That's it. That's all I can tell you. The rest is held secret, Tim.
Really?
And I cannot betray the trust of my listeners.
Huh.
When they say, this is all I want you to share, deny share anymore. I'm like, all right.
Huh.
Here we go, Tim.
Okay.
Hi, Dave.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been listening for a couple of years now. And you should know what Tim is on, too.
Yeah.
And I thought I might be able to contribute to Parashare. For whatever reason, I seem to be one of those people who has had more than their fair share of paranormal experiences. For myself, it hasn't been something that I wanted to have happen. And I don't share these stories much anymore, since they are usually met with the kind of reactions you would expect from folks that aren't into the paranormal. Anywho, I'll start off with a ghostly story from 1999. I left the University of Missouri after my freshman year and moved back to New Hampshire, almost New York Hampshire, Tim, but that's not the name of it. It's New Hampshire, to try to sort myself out a bit. I ended up working for my friend's dad's maintenance company as a helper. And this is where my story begins. It was late fall of 1999. And if you'd been to New England during the season, you'd know that it can be difficult to anticipate the weather. You wake up in the morning and it's 20 degrees, and by lunch, it can be shorts weather. This was one of those days. The night before had been unnaturally cold, and when I got to work in the morning, there was still frost on the grass. I went inside the garage, and like most mornings, we stood around in a circle, sipping our coffee and waiting for Hank to give out the jobs for the day. I was working with an older guy named Dave, and we were sent out to make some repairs at an old house that we were helping to get fixed up to sell. According to Hank, at some point in the night, it was cold enough that pipes had burst and led the hot water heaters into his home. There was some minor flooding and all of the pipes and flanges needed to be replaced. We stopped at the job site first, let ourselves in, checked what parts we'd need to complete the job, ran to the local plumbing supply store. After a quick trip, we headed back to up the hill to Mount Vernon, New Hampshire, and found blood red. That's right. The house was Blood Road. I'm sorry. That's right. The house was located on Blood Road. Would you live on something called Blood Road, Tim?
I can't reveal where I live, Dave, so I can't say whether I would or not.
Well, you don't remember? You're over at 418 Hampstead. What? Well, you can't reveal. I was trying to help you reveal it so that you can get out. 418
No.
Dave got to work putting the new fixtures in and handed me a mop. I set to work cleaning up the water and emptying the buckets. Dave called me back in where he was working and said, "Hey, kid," I was 19, "run upstairs and check the other heaters. We forgot to check if those were leaking, too." I nodded and left to make my way up to the second floor. I haven't mentioned this yet, but the house was pretty big. One of those really old farmhouses that grew as the family grew, sprawling out to make room for everyone. Like most of the houses in this part of town, it dated back to probably the mid-1700s. It had seen its fair share of history. I remember that the house was also connected to the barn that sat next door, which was a little odd and made me wonder if the barn was a new addition. I made my way upstairs and started to check the room by room to make sure that there weren't any leaks. All of the furniture had already been moved out and the place was clean and ready for someone to move in. There's something about an empty house that makes it feel bigger than it actually is. In this case, it was a big place. I had just completed my survey of the rooms when I remembered a door in the hall that I hadn't checked. I circled back to this and opened the door. It was another bedroom, but much smaller than the others. I remember thinking how it was odd, how long it was. Really a long rectangle with a window across from the entrance. There was also doors in the room on the left and right sides, opposite from one another. I didn't see a heater, but figured I would check the doors to see if they led anywhere. The door on the right was a small, shallow closet. I closed it and turned to the door on the left. The knob on the door didn't want to turn for some reason. It wasn't like it was rusty. It felt like the resistance you feel when someone is holding the knob on the other side of the door. I turned harder with a little effort, and I got it to turn, but when I pulled on the door, it didn't want to budge. Now, this might be a good time to mention my physique. I'm a big dude, and back then I was in really good shape. I could bench almost 300 lbs, Tim. It's a lot of lbs's.
How many pounds?
That's 300 as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There was no way a door was going to give me trouble. I gave one last big pull, and sure enough, the door opened, but only for a fraction of a second, long enough for me to see a pale gray hand pulling back on the knob from the other side. The door slammed shut, and I was back downstairs next to Dave before the dust could settle. I've never moved that fast in my life. Dave was looking at me for a minute and probably expect me to tell him about the hot water heaters, but I wasn't saying anything. He asked me if I found any more leaks, and I just remember saying no, but then saying I wasn't sure. He said, "What do you mean?" And I remember being almost in shock, but not wanting to tell him what I'd seen. I said there was one door that was stuck and I couldn't get it open. He sighed and said, "We'd better go check." Now, if you can picture me, 6'1", 270 pounds, slowly following old Dave up the steps, not wanting to go, but following anyway, looking over his shoulder. Yeah, that's right. I was scared crapless, but figured he'd see the same thing I had. We got to the room, and I pointed to the door, getting ready to book it if anything came at him. We walked over casually, turned the knob, and pulled. The door didn't even squeak for him. It opened easily. He peeked in and said, "Huh?" "Aha," I thought. I walked up behind him and looked through the door. It was an unfinished hall that led to another door. No one was in sight. We walked down the hall and opened the door. It was opened abruptly into the rafters of the barn. There was no way down, and the barn was locked. I kept my mouth shut for the rest of the day. I never told Dave what had happened, and honestly, it was probably 7 or so years before I told anyone this story. I know you hear lots of ghostly tales, and some of them are probably more impressive than this, but what I can say is, it really happened. I know we were the only ones there that day. I know what I saw. I just can't rightly say what it was. Thanks for listening, and if you want more, I can tell you about other stuff that has happened over the years. I've had experiences with abduction and seen UFOs twice. I also grew up in a haunted house. There's more. Please don't use my name on the air. I'm a teacher and a coach, and not ready to explain to my students or their families. Okay, I won't say your name on the air because you didn't put your name on the air, but that's cool. Yeah, please share more stories. We'd love to hear them. That was a good one. Freaky. Freaky,
yeah.
Tim.
Yeah.
All right, Tim, we've got a few more stories to eke out here. Let's see. Here's my freaky hospital experience. Hey, Dave, Doctors Medical Center, Modesto, California is definitely haunted. I saw a ghost there while I was working as a janitor. It was a woman sitting on the bed. She was looking out the door as I walked by. My head turned left as I was walking by. Being at work, I couldn't turn around to investigate my glance. However, her image and presence was still clear. As I write this, I am thoroughly creeped out. Also, her image ages while I write, an experience that tells me that perhaps I should not share. I will, because I believe the ghosts are real. She was a young woman and was the typical glowing bluish white that we all think of when we see ghosts. I have to admit that I believe she was there for me to see, as she seemed to represent an archetype of the type of woman who I am innately attracted to, possibly as a foreshadowing of a coming relationship or something. I've always been very attuned with the dead, so the messages come through quite clearly for me. Perhaps I've died a few times before. I was an old school IUD baby, meaning my mother, bless her soul, was on an IUD for birth control when I was conceived. She was also backpacking around for 6 months after conceiving me on Mykonos in Greece. Therefore, it's not too far of a stretch to think that had a possible effect on me as a fetus, getting killed, resuscitated back to life, only to be killed again, then repeating the cycle until I was born. There's more, but I want to call, so I hope I haven't already given you too much. Thanks for your time and consideration. Well, thank you. And unfortunately, my friend, we don't have a way for you to call in.
Yeah.
Sorry. No, we don't do that anymore right now. It's, you know, if you want to record your stories, you can record them and email them to dave@darknessradio.com, and we will upload them and share them on the show. That's probably the best way to do that. What do we got time for? Another story, Tim? Do you think we got one more time?
Yeah.
What, one more time?
One more
time. One more story?
Yep.
All right. Here we go. It is Saturday, March 17th, 2018, when this email came to me. Dave, first off, I want to tell you and Tim how absolutely I'm impressed with both of you. The integrity you both exhibit weekly are true examples of what it's like to be men. You're both equally hardworking and gifted intellectually, but as well as you know how to roll, I mean, you laugh a lot. You enjoy what others offer. You do more for uniting people than you may realize. I wish you guys were nationwide. Well, you kind of are when you do Coast to Coast AM. Well, we're kind of globally wide with our show.
Yeah.
We get about 100,000 downloads, and we've got listeners from across the globe that check it out. But thank you. I get the point. Anyway, he says, let's go into this. I discovered it's, let's see. Weird. This is so weirdly spaced out in here. It's, I discovered Coast to Coast years ago via my Aunt Pauline. She passed away 2 years ago at age 96. She would tell me the incredible things she would hear on Coast to Coast with Art Bell. Well, anyway, this devoted listener to Beyond the Darkness and Coast to Coast, especially when you host, would love to contribute to you some thoughts and experiences. I don't want to bombard you continually, so I will do it all in one email. Get it done, just like pulling off a Band-Aid. Oh, my. Oh, my.
Hmm.
You know what? This is a great letter. There's 2 bajillion letter stories in here.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't I do this, Corliss? I don't want to short shift you here because we've only got a few more minutes left. Why don't I I'll feature that maybe on an upcoming episode where we'll just make the whole parishare all of these great stories that Corliss sent in. How does that sound?
Sounds good.
All right, let's wrap up with this one then here. Good day. I'm a natural intuitive. This is one of my stories I'd like to share with you, as it took place while I was nursing up in Valhalla, New York, Westchester Medical Center. I worked in the specialty unit of a maternal fetal medicine, which is a new wing that was once part of the main hospital. It was actually the geriatric unit previously. Either very early in the morning or late at night, I would see a man dressed in a beige suit walking in and out of the rooms. It was an older looking suit, something from like the 50s. This unit catered only to women now, so there is no reason for a man to be there, especially in those hours. I would catch a glimpse of the man and run after him to see who he was and maybe if I could help him out, but I could never seem to catch up to him. I wasn't the only one who saw him at times, but nobody wanted to say anything. So me being the intuitive and medium that I am, I called him, called for him one morning earlier than the unit opened. He came. He came to me as real as day, standing 5 feet from me, face to face, asking me where his mother was. I knew he was a ghost. He wasn't solid nor transparent, if that makes any sense. He also knew that I was able to see him and speak to him when no one else could. He kept asking for his mother. He said, I just left her and now she's gone. I asked the mother's name. He told me it was Betty Anderson. I wrote it down in the name and so I wouldn't forget. As soon as I looked up, he was gone. My coworker came in and immediately we went and did some digging, aka research. Sure enough, Betty Anderson was a nurse that used to work there from 1962 to 1979. She became a patient there in that wing before she died from pneumonia. Weeks went by. I didn't see him, even with me calling him. Finally, it was late at night, and I caught a glimpse of him with the corner of my eye in the same room that I had had that conversation with him. So I ran in, and I said to him, I know what happened to your mother. I told him as gently as I could, your mother died from pneumonia in 1979. I'm very sorry. There was no reaction. He just vanished. No one has seen him again. I have many true stories to tell. Thank you. And that comes from Phyllis. Well, thank you, Phyllis. We appreciate you sharing that story with us as well. And all of the great stories everybody has sent in. Thank you for being a part of our show and part of our world. Remember to check out True Crime Tuesday tomorrow. You can go subscribe at darknessradio.com. Click on that True Crime Tuesday banner and never miss another minute of the best in True Crime Talk Radio. Tomorrow, Bullied to Death. A story of bullying, social media, and the suicide of Cherokee Harriman with Judith A. Yates, our guest. Plus, we've got Dumb Crimes and Stupid Criminals. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. You've been listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.